Tell me what you had for breakfast.
For breakfast, I had nothing. I was fasting for breakfast.
Oh, tell me how that tasted.
It tastes like my saliva.
Yeah? What does your saliva taste like?
It's like pure angel tears.
Welcome to the Travel Like a Boss podcast, where we interview location-independent entrepreneurs that travel the world like a boss by being their own boss. Here's your host, Johnny FD.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny and welcome to episode 226 of the Travel Like a Boss podcast. We recorded this episode in Vilnius, Lithuania with Aidas, who is a long-term listener and someone who took what he had listened to and heard and learned from the podcast and became a location independent entrepreneur himself, a successful digital nomad himself, making enough money to be able to travel and work abroad. There's a ton of good information in this episode. Unfortunately, the audio is not great. We were using a new mixer. I actually was borrowing my friend Kristen's mixer, and I thought I had tested it and used it correctly, but something was wrong. And I'm not actually sure what it is, but unfortunately, I almost threw it out. But my editor, Anthony, convinced me that it's not terrible to listen to, and I took another listen to it, and I think that if you listen to it with either on speakerphone or on kind of low volume in a quiet place and don't blast it, you don't hear the cracks and snap the snackle and props as bad. It's still listenable. It's not great. So I apologize for this, but the options was to either throw out this episode completely and lose an hour of really, really good knowledge. And I think if it was another interview where we just, you know, talked about travel and there wasn't that many like lessons to be learned, I might have just deleted it and said, you know, I'm sorry, but there's so much good information here that I did not want this lost. So if you can bear with us, enjoy this episode. If not, we'll catch you next week in episode 227. Hey everyone, this is Johnny and welcome to the Travel Like a Boss podcast. I am here in Vilnius, Lithuania with an authentic Lithuanian and podcast listener, Aidas Rasimas.
Wow, you actually pronounce my name's surname so well.
Achu. I'm Russian. Speaking Lithuanian wow. Now.
You're so good. You've been in Lithuania, what, a few days? You already speak Russian, yeah. Lithuanian with local people.
What's funny is Sam's been here for a month and he didn't even know how to say achu.
Oh, okay.
Which, by the way, if you guys are listening, that means thank you.
Yeah.
It's also not the way they sneeze here. What's the sound for sneezing? Because in the U.S. and probably in the rest of the world, if you want to sneeze, you say ah-choo.
Yeah.
But here it's thank you.
No, it's... Yeah, if you make the opposite of it, that's, yeah.
So,
but it's one of the easiest words to learn in Lithuania. It's just like ah-choo. You basically sneeze.
But so let's say you want to pretend you're sneezing. What would you say?
Choo.
You would just say choo. Yeah. So without the ah.
Yeah.
That's so confusing.
You don't say ah-choo. See.
Okay, all right, well, let's move on from that. Yeah. That's your Lithuanian lesson for the day, guys. But the reason why I wanted to have Aidas on is, first, I want to talk about Lithuania a bit, but also, I really, really love having guests on who were previous listeners to the show, but didn't just listen and then, you know, go about their normal lives, that they actually took action and they actually, you know, went ahead and put together, you know, went through the motions of creating their own location, independent life and success. And Aidas and I had dinner last night and here we are actually in Kristen Wilson's apartment traveling with Kristen. You want to say hi real quick?
Hi. Hey, travel like a boss people. How are you doing?
Wait, they can't answer.
They're answering. All right.
So Johnny took over my Airbnb here in Vilnius, but it's fair because I crashed his trip with Sam. So it's only fair that I let you record in my Airbnb if you let me come on this trip.
Well, what's funny is Sam was basically here anyway. So I was like, all right, well, I'll come meet you. And then I think I just wrote on my Facebook saying I'll be in Vilnius hanging out with Sam for a week. Who wants to come? And then Kristen.
I was like, oh, I can go because I was going to be in France. And I was like, yeah, I'm sure Lithuania is right on the way to Norway, which was where I was going. But I found out that it's definitely not on the way. But I still came anyway.
You just invited yourself.
Yeah. And I don't think Lithuania is on the way to anywhere, except for maybe Belarus, maybe?
Yeah.
Actually, no, it's not.
To Russia or somewhere. Or...
It's not, because as Americans, we cannot take a train.
Oh, yeah, you need to take a plane.
Yeah, so we'd have to fly into Belarus. We can't take the 20-minute train there. Or we can't take a 20-minute bus there, even though we're pretty close to Belarus now. We have to get on a plane. So there's no point of getting on a plane from here, because it's often cheaper to get on a plane from somewhere else.
You know, the truth is... Belarus actually experimenting with visas right now, because it's like, even I think a year and a half before, it's very complicated to get, even for us to go. We need proper visa, but now they just give us visa free, and I think they're still thinking, okay, what to do, how many tourists coming, what we're gonna do next. So maybe in a year or two it can be different, maybe you can just come and stay for a month or something.
Yeah, I remember last year I had heard that Belarus had finally opened their borders.
Yeah.
And for Americans, we would now get 3 days on arrival.
Wow. Is it true? 3 days only?
It was insane. And I thought, okay, I guess it's okay if you like are passing by and you want to just, you know, check out the country for a few days. But who's passing through Belarus? There are like no flights that go through Belarus and then somewhere else.
Yeah, you need to go out of your way.
Yeah. And luckily, I think what happened, yeah, I think you're right. They're experimenting, seeing like, oh my God, what if we let all these tourists in? What's going to happen? Yeah. Do we have the infrastructure? Are they going to run amok? Are there going to be fights? Are there going to be protests? And then probably nothing happened.
Yeah, so we're just increasing this like day by day, week by week.
Yeah, I also think probably nobody went. Like, I'm very curious how many tourists actually took advantage of the 72-hour visa.
Yeah, we never know, because it's dictatorship and they can falsificate or just data. I mean, you never know.
Yeah, but this, as of this year, they've increased the stay limit to, I think, was it 2 weeks or 30 days? I don't remember.
I think we're getting like 30 days, Lithuanians and maybe.
Okay. Maybe Americans as well. But the only problem is we have to fly in, so... This year, I'm not going to go, even though my original plan was to take a train from Western Ukraine to Belarus.
Oh, really?
And then from Belarus, take another train to Vilnius, which would have been a nice trip.
Yeah.
But not possible. So instead, I took a 30-euro Wizz Air flight directly from Kiev, Ukraine to Vilnius. So let's rewind. Actually, how did we meet? How did you first hear about me?
So how... I mean, I don't know where to start. Should I start like... Okay, so basically, at one point in my life, I was quitting my job, and I already thought what I want to be location independent. I never heard about Johnny before. I don't know anything about that. And when I started working on my stuff, in the beginning, I was working on my Udemy course, actually, but when I switched to reselling video games, and as I was researching my Udemy course things, I wanted to know how many people are actually making money. I was looking for use cases, like how many people can... I mean, I found your blog, and the post was what, in previous few months, you were making like few hundred dollars. So I thought, okay, someone is making money, it's cool, I'm gonna do my course. I started my course, went to switch to selling video games, but I still remember what, okay, I saw something about Thailand.
Yeah.
John Thailand.
Well, on that point, when I first got into online business and I wanted to create a Udemy course, because I heard about this platform, it looked like it was popular. I mean, you would see people with, you know, hundreds of students or hundreds of reviews, maybe even thousands sometimes, and you would do the math and you think, wow, if this person is selling this course for $500 and he has 2,000 students, he's made $200 million from this course.
Yeah, that's why I was also suspicious. I thought, is it even possible to make? Is it like fake accounts? Is this what's happening here?
Yeah, and at the time, when I tried to do the research, and there was no information. Mm. There was nobody doing income reports or case studies. Yeah. Nobody was publicly sharing this information. And the people who were making the money on the courses, like, they didn't want to tell anyone. It was secretive, you know, to them. And I took the gamble back in probably 2014 with my girlfriend at the time, and we made our first course together, and we were like, okay, well, I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know anyone who's done it, but it makes sense. If we make a good course, it seems like it's a good platform. Let's just try it. So we risked, you know, 2 months of our life, a lot of fights, but then it worked, and then we made money, and I thought, you know what?
Yeah.
Let me share this information for other people who are going through the same thing.
Yeah, what interested me to make some Udemy course, because the cost of making it is like zero. You just buy the mic and just do your course. And I saw a few courses, which I think I had in one of your podcasts. Quality was not good. Audio is like questionable. And I thought, okay, let's do it. But then when I was doing my video game sales, so I found your blog. And in the back of my mind, I still remember something was about Thailand. And while I was still not location independent, I was still not making enough money.
Where were you living at the time?
In Vilnius, here in Lithuania. In the back of my mind, I was thinking, okay, I would love to live somewhere outside Lithuania for a while. And I was still thinking, should I go to Latin America, maybe Asia? And your post, something related to Thailand, I just opened it again and I saw, okay, some podcast, travel, something, boss. And when I started listening, it's like, oh my God, it's not actually about traveling. It's about like businesses. And I was like, wow, this is cool. And we were like 60 episodes already and I just started listening. So All my, like, I don't know, 2 weeks was like, I was working on my stuff. In the morning, I just wake up at 6 a.m., just put Johnny FD in my ear and just listen until I go to sleep and just like...
Wow. Yeah, so how long did it take you to listen to those 60 episodes?
It was like 2 weeks, I think. Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's like every day. Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. I wonder how many other people have done that.
I don't know, but it's just like, yeah.
If you guys have ever binge listened to the podcast, please let me know. Like, let me know on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, or you know, wherever you listen. Mm-hmm. Leave a review. Let me know there. That'd be really cool. Because I get the same way when I find a podcast that really interests me and it's something that I can learn from, but also something that I enjoy listening to.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I listen to all the episodes and I'm like, okay, where's the new ones? And I'm sure there's a lot of people upset during my summer travels, especially when I'm in like Ukraine, for example, where there's no nomads, that the episodes start coming out a bit slower. Some maybe, you know, every 2-3 weeks, sometimes once a month. But the reason why I continue doing it, and every time I meet someone interesting with a good story that I go out of my way to share it, is because I know there's people like you or people like me when I was starting that this information, just knowing that someone else has done it, how they've done it, maybe learning from their mistakes, but also just seeing it's possible, can really change someone's life.
Yeah. How many episodes you already have right now? It's over 200.
Yeah, this one is episode 225.
So
now,
I think, I mean, if someone wants to be location independent, and if you listen through all the episodes and you don't know what to do, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's almost a bad thing where we give them too much choice now. Because I think in the beginning, because I started with dropshipping, I would just tell everyone like, oh, you should start a dropshipping store.
Yeah.
And for 90% of people, that's probably a very good idea. You know, especially if they come from the US or Australia or another big country it's, you know, it's normal for people to buy things online. It's normal for credit cards, you know, to be accepted. But then I think the reason why I diversify so much is, first, it's interesting hearing about different business models.
Yeah.
And then second, I know that, you know, like if someone's from a small country or they're from somewhere that, you know, maybe they don't take credit cards online very, very normally, or e-commerce isn't a big thing yet, maybe it's not for them. And maybe they can do something else. And when you told me that you resell video games online, I was like, what? Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, so is this the actual question?
What does it mean? How do you resell video games online?
Yeah, so I think you told me you know about Steam platform. So
I used to play Counter-Strike.
Oh, really? Yeah. So yeah, this is the main platform for video games. And how all this started, actually, Lithuania was and still is a relatively poor country. And 10 years ago, it's like everyone is pirating games. Like, I don't know, maybe 5% of enthusiastic gamers actually buy games. I was also pirating games. And at one point, my girlfriend sent me a few games on Steam, basically like a gift. And I thought, okay, it's interesting. How much do they cost? And on sale, it was like €2 or €3. I'm like, oh my God, can you actually buy a game for this much? Because in my mind, I thought, okay, typical game gonna cost like 20, 40 euros. And it's like it's a bit too much.
How did she find it? Was she just like really good at online shopping?
Yeah, I don't know. She actually played some video games before. So, and just she decided, okay, Iris loves playing video games. He doesn't buy them. So she bought it for me.
She sounds like the dream girl. Why did you break up with her?
This is a long story.
Okay, the rest of the episode is just going to be about your love life.
Oh my God, it's going to be long. So basically, she sent me those games. I thought, okay, they cost so little. can you actually make money on these? Because, you know, maybe there are more people like me who think like, okay, a typical game gonna cost like 30 euros and, you know, if I can get cheaper. So I found few platforms similar to eBay, but basically dedicated to video games. So these are G2A.com and Kinguin.net. And basically it's like gray market. People who have like spare Steam keys just can resell easily. And of course they play pay platform fees like 10-15%. And
okay, so before we get into the economics of it, for those who weren't gaming nerds like us, Steam is an online platform where you can connect to other gamers worldwide and play games like Counter-Strike. What other games were popular on Steam?
Yeah, just like GTA,
Grand Theft
Auto, all this like, I don't know, Left 4 Dead, just so many.
So a lot of the games that are very popular that people have heard of, like Grand Theft Auto and Counter-Strike, shout out to anyone who's used the pump shotgun.
Yeah, basically, if you're a Counter-Strike lover or like, you know, about Half-Life, these were actual developers who created that platform, you know.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
It's Valve, and they created the Steam, so...
So the programming company Valve created the games, and they thought, okay, instead of selling the physical discs in a store like Walmart or
because at that time you typically would go just physical store, buy a game, go back home, install it, and then you just play it.
So they decided, why don't we make it an online download so people around the world can download it? There's less physical costs, but then to verify that they actually bought it, we give them this, you know, 16 or 24 digit passcode, numeric passcode, and that is called your key.
Yeah.
And once you have the key, even if you change computers, you can still use it because you technically own it.
Yeah, you just have the same account which you can log in into, and you can do it from any country, anywhere. It's just like all your games can be, you know, in your newly restored laptop if it was stolen or something like that.
So my question is, can I resell my old Counter-Strike key?
No.
Okay, why not?
No, because when you activate a game, it's just fixed to your account and you can't just take it out and give to someone else.
What if I just sell my whole account?
You technically can do that, and some people do that on eBay, but it's according to terms and conditions not allowed.
Okay. So if anyone wants to borrow my account forever, let me know. I'll make sure I change my password instead of using the same password I probably used for every single thing. This is why LastPass is a good service, is because if you need to give someone your account, it's always going to be some randomly generated password. Okay, but let's not do that. Let's half legally buy new keys.
Yeah.
And why would there be extra keys or new keys that haven't been registered to an account?
Yeah, so basically sometimes, I mean, that's how it works. Usually, you know, you have a game developing company who has a publisher, and the company publisher is responsible to selling the games. And what we do, sometimes we do promotions on official retailers, so many of them. I mean, if you're gonna Google, I don't know, Left 4 Dead 4, any game basically which you like, which is on Steam. So you're gonna find so many official retailers. And you're allowed to buy the keys from them on these discounts. And you have a key which usually costs like, I don't know, 20 euros, 5 euros for $1, $2.
But why would it be so cheap?
As the game gets older, it just doesn't sell that much. So we just reduce the price or just sell it for quite cheap. Or sometimes there are certain bundles. Let's say one of the most popular is Humble Bundle. You probably heard of it. So what we do is just like, you have several tiers. If you pay $1, you can get like 3 games. If you pay 5, you can have more games, and it's like that. So if you, maybe I saw like 4 games which potentially can sell for much, much more, I just can buy it.
It's almost like buying some variety pack or something.
Yeah,
knowing that if I split these apart and sell them separately, they're worth more.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a good tip for people, not just for reselling video games, but really anything. It can be physical items, it can be digital products. If you see a really, really good price on something that, you know, is bundled together because they're just trying to get rid of it, because that happens a lot, right? Like, you know, manufacturers or or stores, they sometimes just need to get rid of inventory.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't want to deal with the marketing. They're just like,
we just want to sell the price for the price we think is right, and let's just take it out.
And yeah, and sometimes it could be really cheap. It's almost like going to the bargain bin of your local Target or something, and then reselling it on Amazon for full price.
Yeah.
Which people do, actually. That's a method in the US.
Oh, really?
People literally drive around to different big box stores like Walmart, Target, Kmart, look for things that are on sale, on clearance for more than half off. They would just buy everything and then list it all on Amazon for full price, because maybe in California nobody wants this product.
That's true.
But somewhere else they're looking for it.
Yeah, because US market is so huge, so in one part of US you can find something pretty cheap which is like double the price in like other state.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically I look at reselling video games almost like stocks, and just bear with me. So most of the people who also do the same, they resell video games, they usually take video games, put them on these resale platforms, and just set the price as cheap as possible. I mean, just to sell quickly. But I don't try to sell quickly. I just buy. I research my price. I research how long it's probably going to take for the price to be, which is like profitable for me. And I just wait. Quite often, if my game key, which has, let's say I bought today, if it's going to sell in 6 months, I think it's quick. Okay. Usually I wait for maybe a year, year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. And then sometimes on these keys, I can make like 500% profit.
So why would they go up in price?
So that's the thing. Let's say you have a bundle, Humble Bundle. Someone sold so many Grand Theft Auto 3 games. And because it was so cheap, so many people bought it and put on these platforms.
Yeah.
So it becomes like one less than euro maybe. And so many people just sell them. And it takes a while for the price go up because they sell out.
That
and
makes
then
sense.
Normal price goes back. So then that's when I sell.
And also, I'm assuming that during that time, they can also just buy directly from the manufacturer as the Humble Bundle. The Humble Bundle.
Yeah, Humble
Anyway, Bundle. So they can either buy it individually from the resellers for cheap, or they can just buy the whole package for cheap.
Yeah.
But what you're doing is you're basically holding onto these keys until the sale is over. So even if they try to go directly to the manufacturer, that the bundle is gone, so they can't buy it anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also the people who had bought, the resellers who had bought,
sell out.
Yeah, they're done with inventory.
That's it. Then that's where I come with my price, which is like suitable for me.
You're
sometimes
like, I still have this.
Sometimes I just get in trouble because let's say I bought, I don't know, 1,000 euros worth of video game, which cost, let's say, maybe 5 euros for me. I thought, okay, I'm going to be able to sell it for 10. And then some mysterious Humble Bundle comes, and this game is like in a bundle for 1 euro, and the price from 5 euros goes half euros. So my 1,000 worth of video games is like 100 euros, and it's like, oh my god, then I'm gonna have to wait like 2 years just to get my money back.
Has there ever been a case where you've had to sell at a loss, or you just couldn't sell them at all?
Yes, I mean, you can still sell for basically almost nothing, but yeah, I had quite a few cases where I had to lose, but I had quite a few cases where it's like, let's say, do you know Fallout 3?
Yes.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to have enough Fallout 3 Steam keys accumulated, and when we announced Fallout 4, oh my god, I just sold out everything like in a day. I made like, I don't know, more than 1,000 euros in a day.
Just because of the publicity?
Yeah, and that's why sometimes I follow news, check what's going on. So basically, just because, you know, Fallout 4 is coming out, people didn't expect, we want to play previous one. And we just look, okay, I just want to get a key.
That's funny, because I think a lot of people would assume that if the new one is coming out, why would you buy the old one? But it's almost like when the new Marvel movie comes out, all of a sudden you're like, oh, maybe I should rewatch the old one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it works exactly like
before it comes out, because I'm excited, I'm anticipating. It's still not going to come out for a few months.
Yeah.
But if I can, you know, if I can watch all the old DVDs, all the old Blu-rays, like during those months before, it's helping me remember what it's like, get me excited, and then I don't have to wait 2 months for Fallout 4 to come out.
Yeah.
I can play Fallout 3 for 2 months.
Yeah, and sometimes people who didn't even play Fallout 3 were like, oh my god, the fourth one coming, and I had it in my mind, I wanted to play third one, okay, this is the time, I need to do it now.
So in that case, if you see that it's going to come out, are you going to raise your price on Fallout 3?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. And you know, this makes sense because in general, the most you can lose is 100%.
Yeah.
Which, and stick with me, guys. I know it sounds weird. But the most you can lose for any key is 100%. But there's some that you can make 500%, which means let's say even if half of them you lose, and this is kind of simplifying because it's probably all over the place, but if some you lose 100%, but some you make 500%, you're still net positive 300% returns, which is really big. But I'm assuming that most of them you make just like, you know, most of them are not the big home runs and most of them are not 100% loss.
Yeah, I usually go for like 50% margin, 40% margin. And when you have these like outcasts where you almost don't make money or lose, and sometimes you make a few hundred percent. So, okay. Yeah.
And how are you storing these keys?
That's the brilliant part because it's digital. I just keep it in my Google Docs. Of course, I have two-way authentication and everything. Okay. So, because if someone's going to get in, it's just like, I'm in trouble.
Yeah. So it's just like a Google spreadsheet or something.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And that's what's so nice about it is you don't have to, can you imagine having thousands of DVD sets, like, you know, like PS4 discs in the box,
yeah,
and then having to ship it? This is basically like selling video games online. And what do you do when they buy it? You just email them the 16-digit code and that's it?
That's the thing. I'm in the beginning, I actually, it's like a little bit beginning of my story. I actually made a website and I thought to sell these game keys on the website just to use Google Ads, advertise and just get some customers. But at that point, it was a very tough time. I broke up with my girlfriend, quit job, and that's why I thought, okay, maybe I should concentrate on Udemy because it doesn't cost any money. And then, because I already bought some stock from these gray markets, I put them back to the gray markets without even thinking much about it. And in a week, I made like 60 euros. I'm like, what? I didn't even try to make money on this. And it's like, just by holding them, I just increased value because someone sold out and I made money. That's why I decided, okay, let me analyze the prices, what's going on. Okay, can I mean, if I didn't try, I made 60 euros in a week. What would be if I would try? So,
yeah,
that's why in first month, you know, actually all I had, all my money was like 2,000 euros. And I was incredibly lucky because at that time we were going on like spring sales. You know, it was like March or something. And I bought so many game keys. For me, 2,000 euros at that time was a huge amount of money.
It was all your money.
Yeah, it was all my money. And so I decided, okay, to go all in. I just bought those Steam keys and I start reselling. And in first month, I make like 600 euros. I'm like, wow.
Wow, that's really good for just...
Because it's almost like my salary, which I was receiving in my corporate job.
So you were living in Lithuania. At the time, you were not even on the euro yet, right?
It was actually a few months after the euro was introduced.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And what was that? What was this average salary back then in Lithuania?
Wait, let me think. It's probably like 650.
Okay. Yeah, so you basically were making your a full-time job salary buying and selling these keys online.
Yeah.
And were you working 40 hours a week during this?
No, I basically already quit my job. And that's when I started doing all this reselling.
Yeah. And so now this is your full-time job?
Yeah, it's my full-time job.
But how many hours a week do you actually have to work during this?
During this, at least first 3 months I was working like, I don't know, like 70 hours a week.
Doing what? I mean, it doesn't seem like it...
Yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't seem like you just buy, sell. But you don't just... It's like, you know, the same if you meet someone, oh, I'm just buying stocks and then reselling. It seems like easy. You just buy.
Oh, yeah, two clicks. Yeah, 5 minutes.
You spend so much time researching, thinking, okay, what's the potential in this one? How it's going to go? Okay, what are the possibilities? Am I missing out if I'm investing in this one instead of that one? So just so much time just, you know, just analyzing, doing your research.
And then now, how many hours a week do you have to work?
I probably work like, I don't know, 20.
Okay. But I think because you have the knowledge, you have the system now.
Yeah. Yeah, what's beautiful now, like, because I've been doing that for 4 years, So now I accumulated all that knowledge, and sometimes without even trying, I see the sale. I'm like, oh, I know it's going to sell double the price in 2 years. I'm just going to buy it.
Nice. And can I ask how much you're earning now?
Right now, the average would be close to 2,000 euros.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Because the average salary in Lithuania is what? Less than 1,000?
Yeah, around 800, 750, something like that.
Yeah. So you're making more than double what the average salary in Lithuania is.
For me, it was crazy because in the beginning, even when I made these 600, I was like, oh my God, I was sitting in my underwear in my apartment and just doing this thing where I was like busting my balls, like doing overtime and just being so stressed.
What was your job before?
Before this, I had corporate job. I basically was a sales manager in a consumer lending company. We were basically doing loans and leasing, and I was managing few big business partners of our company.
But you couldn't do that in your underwear?
No. No, and I had to be every single morning at a certain time.
What were the hours?
Was it like, I think it's like 9 to 6 p.m.
Okay, and you have to commute there?
Yeah, good part, I still had company's car at this position. Nice. Okay. So
you just have to drive there.
Fuel allowance and everything. So it's
And now you can work from anywhere.
Yeah.
Have you worked outside of Lithuania?
Yeah, of course. In fact, you know, when I started earning some money and I thought, okay, first month 600, it's like, seems unreal. Because I almost made my salary. At that time I was making in that company 850 maybe. And when second month comes, it's like 1,500. I'm like, oh my God, almost double my salary. Just crazy. But I thought it's probably a fluke. It can't just be going on like that. And the good part, because all the money I made, I didn't increase my life living expenses.
That's very smart. So, and when you said that you were making, let's say when you made 600 in profit, did that include the inventory that you had bought? Or
It's pure profit. Yeah,
okay. That's your net profit that you're left with. Nice. Net,
which I can use. So basically, And I was, my living expenses at that time was like maybe 500 euros.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't realize that even though Lithuania, a lot of people probably actually don't know anything about Lithuania.
But, yeah, that's true.
But if you came here, especially in Vilnius, the capital, it's a very nice city. It looks very similar to the rest of Europe, even a lot of places in Western Europe.
Mm-hmm.
If you imagine Amsterdam without a million people.
I've never been to Amsterdam, so I have no idea.
Or I guess even some parts of like the old towns in Barcelona or a lot of Western European cities, Vilnius looks very similar, just with a lot less people.
Mm.
And the price is still much lower, even though it's actually increased a lot.
That's true. Yeah.
And this is why getting on the euro has both its pros and cons. Well, actually, as a Lithuanian, were you happy that you're changing your currency from the, what was it, the lith?
Yeah, we have litas.
Litas?
Yeah.
To the euro?
Yeah, I was happy about that because, you know, it's much easier to travel and to be part of eurozone. And it's just like, you know, if your country has its own currency, you never sure what's going to happen with your currency.
It's unstable,
it's not stable. The government can control it. We can devalue it. And with euro, you can't. It's just like so many member states.
But did you notice the prices increased when Lithuania switched to the euro?
Yeah, it took like, I don't know, 3 to 6 months and real estate prices started increasing. Now it's like double. In like 5-6 years, it's just double. And some food prices. And of course, because salaries increased at that time, so services also increase. Like you can get a haircut, like now it's like 30, maybe 40% more expensive, and any kind of service.
Yeah, I remember I walked by a barbershop, and maybe it was because it's like a hipster barbershop, but they wanted, I think, like 15 or 20 euros for a haircut.
Oh my God, yeah.
Is that normal?
I still remember in my childhood, I was able to get a haircut for like 1 euro.
I remember last week I got a haircut for 2 euros, but this was in Ukraine.
Okay. So I think Ukraine is right now where Lithuania was like 15 years ago.
I think so as well.
Yeah.
In both economics, but also the way it looks. Mm. Actually, we were joking that when we walked through Kristen's apartment, the actual apartment is really nice.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a really modern.
Yeah, it's well renovated and yeah.
So it's like, it looks like something out of like HGTV or something, you know, but it also has the exposed brick that kind of shows the old character. It's a loft. I think she's paying, I don't know what she's paying, but it's over $1,000 a month on
Airbnb. Yeah, monthly it's going to be easy, probably 1,000.
And it's right in the city center.
Yeah, but in fact, if you want to rent something in a central part of Vilnius, of course, it's going to be long term, usually the contract at least 1 year. You can easily get quite decent apartment for €500.
Okay. And if you want to be a little bit outside of the center, what's like a cheaper apartment?
Cheaper. If you like really on a budget, it's going to cost you like 250, okay. 300 maybe.
And would that be very far from the center, or how would you get
Vilnius,
it?
Vilnius, in fact, it's not a huge city. So even on public transportation, I spent this night tonight at my friend's apartment and I took trolley bus. It took me like, I don't know, 15 minutes to get here. And if you have a car, it's really easy.
Yeah, and what's nice is even though some things in Lithuania are very expensive, some things are still very cheap. So, for example, it's kind of weird because the salaries here are still much lower than Western Germany.
Yeah.
But the cost of, for example, a liter of milk is exactly the same price here as in Berlin, where the salary might be double or maybe even triple. But some things are a third of the price, like public transport. So the trolleys and the metro, no, it's not a metro, but the buses and the...
Trolley buses,
they're €1 versus in Germany or in other places, it's usually, it starts at €2.20, maybe even €3.20.
And if you buy a monthly pass, I think it's like unlimited monthly pass, it's like €30.
€30?
Yeah, something like that.
Man, I remember... As a child in San Francisco, it was 30 euros or something for the unlimited bus pass.
Yeah.
Now it's over 100.
Oh my God.
So, yes, something like that are really cheap. Ubers are still very cheap. I took a 15-minute ride this morning for €2.
Yeah.
Pretty much anywhere in the city center is usually €2 to €3.
Yeah, Uber is very popular, but also we have a local app. I think it's called Bolt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have much more cars. Who use this app, so usually you get car faster.
Yeah, actually I spoke to a bunch of Lithuanians, like, but also the taxi drivers, and we always, I don't know why, we always ended up talking about Bolt versus Uber.
Really?
It's like a very hot topic.
So they usually bring that up.
I think so. I don't know why this topic comes up, but basically all the young people, they like Bolt, maybe because it's faster. I don't know, is it cheaper or not?
It's maybe 5-10% cheaper.
Okay. And I think when you're, you know, like university student, that 5 or 10% matters.
So yeah, you try to cut your cost.
Yeah. So like, why wouldn't you, right? But then I was speaking to an Uber driver and he said the reason why he drives Uber and not Bolt is the quality of the clientele.
Yeah, it makes sense.
He says that when he drives Uber, it's normally like international travelers who are interesting to speak to. He can practice his English. Or they're businessmen, or they're kind of just
it makes sense.
Higher quality people. And when he drives Bolt, it's like drunken anyone.
Like, yeah, that's true. If you like, you know, foreigner like you, of course you have Uber. Yeah. You first, you know, taxi app you're gonna try here, Uber. So yeah.
And they also said that with Bolt, it's kind of like get in, get out. Versus Uber, let's say you forget your cell phone in the Uber, it's pretty much guaranteed that you can get your cell phone back. But with Bolt or with a taxi, like, it might just be gone.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know. Yeah.
So I guess maybe a good travel tip is insurance for losing your phone. I also like all the other public transport. Well, not even public transport, but just ways of getting around Vilnius. You have the cycles.
Bicycles.
The bicycle rentals.
Electric scooters.
Yeah, so the shared bikes are on... It feels like they're on every corner.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
I saw you have some trouble registering for it.
Yeah. So, negative shout out to Cycles. I think it's a horrible name.
I don't even remember.
Yeah. If he can't remember the name and I can't pronounce it, it's a bad name. But I think it's because it's a French company. And
yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
So, their registration process is so bad. Like, they have these kiosks and they have the bikes. So, you think you can go up to the kiosk, put in your card... and get a bike, but you cannot.
Did we even have like English interface?
Luckily they did, but it didn't help because you go up to it and I think you can buy a 3-day pass for €2.90 and at the terminal, but you would still need to go get a physical card somewhere and they don't tell you where.
Really?
Yeah. Oh
my God, that's such a bad.
Okay, as it turns out, the physical card, you can either go to the tourism office somewhere in the center or you can go, you can get the multi-use like bus pass, like the one that you had mentioned for €30, and you can connect it, which makes it easy for a local if they have a bus pass.
They probably never thought about foreigners using it. And then, I mean, if it would be smart, they would just give like someone who's not local, okay, just try to use it, and immediately you can see, okay, where
it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So it was bad because I'm here for a week. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to buy 2 of the 3-day passes. Let me just buy the 30-day pass, which is €1 more.
Really?
So the pricing is so weird. So it's either you pay basically €2.90 for 3 days or €3.90 for 30 days.
Yeah, basically we're trying to rip off people who just come here for a few days.
And because you see it, I mean, like if they didn't give me the option, I'd be like, oh, €2.90, unlimited rides. Okay, that's fine. But then when I see it in front of me, I'm like, that's such a bad value. Why would I do that? Yeah. So let me get the 30-day pass. And I was like, okay, I have to register online. That's fine. I have my phone. So I use my iPhone and I'm trying to register. But their website is not mobile responsive.
So it just still have this like typical desktop website, yeah?
Yeah. So the font is like size like 4 font. And they have to like zoom in.
What are we doing?
And you're trying to fill it out and you're like, okay, I'm filling this out. But then the next button doesn't light up. It's like orange, like a faded gray orange. Uh-huh. But you know, normally when you fill out the forms correctly, it lights up orange to indicate you can press next. But it doesn't. It just stays pale orange.
Yeah, someone who created interface supposed to be fired.
They probably created it. To be fair, they probably created it in 2002.
Yeah, probably 15 years
and
ago.
Nobody's updated it.
Just like, oh, okay, locals understand. We just use it for why change.
So. Yeah, and it was so bad. Like, I literally, Kristen and I were standing at the bikes for more than 25 minutes.
Really?
Oh. Both on our phones, and we are like very savvy internet users.
Yeah, I know.
You know, like if we cannot figure it out, I guarantee the normal person cannot figure it out. Somehow. She's a bit smarter than me. After 4 tries in 25 minutes, she figured it out. I couldn't at all, and I just gave up. And so I took one of those electric scooters instead, which is by, I found, what was the company? Busy Bee or something? City Bee?
That's the thing. We just started doing this summer, William, so I didn't try it, and I don't even remember the name.
City Bee.
I just know it was very big backslash because we kind of had a high price. So everyone's like, what the hell? CTB, yeah, I remember now CTB. CTB, we actually, I don't know if you tried, you probably didn't, but it's very cool service with the cars. So basically, you have an app, you can register your account with your driving license, even foreigner driving license is allowed. And basically, what you do, you just put like in Uber your credit card, you just open the app, tap the car which you want to open because you have on the map so many of those, tap the car, and it just opens, you just go in, you just drive like, I think you can choose how many minutes or what is the distance, and it just calculates. It's a bit more expensive than Uber, but it gives you freedom. If you want to drive someone's, I know my friends in Vilnius sometimes, if they just, my car just broke, okay, he just goes to there and just, you can leave a car in so many places in Vilnius. So it's just so convenient.
Yeah, I really like it as a kind of car sharing service that can unlock through your phone. And in the same app, they have the electric scooters.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the Bird scooters that we have in the US. And they're nice because you can pick them up anywhere, you drop them off anywhere.
Yeah.
So you don't need like a specific drop-off point. But the weird thing, the two bad things. One is Vilnius, especially in the old city, has cobblestone roads. So they look pretty, but they're really hard to drive on a scooter, an electric scooter.
Yeah, you need to use sidewalks. People usually drive on bicycle lane.
Yeah, but even then sometimes it's like cobblestone bicycle lanes. And on a bicycle, it's fine because it has enough shock absorption.
You have small wheels on a scooter, it's just like...
And it's relatively expensive still because I remember...
I don't know the price, but yeah.
A short ride, like 10 minute ride, would cost me €2.50, which to be fair, is half the price of the US because it's way overpriced there. I remember it was like $7 to ride 15, 20 minutes.
Wow.
Which is crazy, especially because if like, let's say there's two of you riding it, you could have just taken a taxi, even though our taxis are overpriced in the US. But here in Vilnius, it's way overpriced because you could have bought a month pass or at least a three-day pass for the bicycles, or you could have easily taken an Uber for the same price.
Yeah, that's why it was such a big backslash in the news, because it's like, what the hell, are you crazy? Like, you know, you almost can get a car for the same price, CTB car, instead of a scooter.
But I think the reason why people still use it is it's so fun.
Yeah, it's fun, convenient,
and
quick.
It's so convenient. You don't have to wait for the driver. It's just there, you grab it, and then you can leave it anywhere.
Yeah.
So I think that's why people like it. And luckily here, there's not as many, so they're not as annoying. I know in LA, they had a big backlash because they dropped like 10,000 overnight, and they were just all over the streets. So people were like tripping over it. People were just like...
So it's probably similar to like a bicycle sharing in China, where you see such a huge piles of bicycles because it's just like they leave it everywhere.
I've heard. And I only had one problem. I was sitting in front of a walk-to-walk, one of these fast food Asian restaurants, which is surprisingly good, by the way. Just order half sauce. It's a bit too saucy. And somebody had parked their CTB scooter there, and I watched... Everyone, you know, for 15 minutes while I was eating, everyone walked by and they had to walk around it. And because someone just left it kind of in the middle. And then when I was done eating, I was like, you know what? Let me just move the scooter and just have it, instead of having it be like diagonal, just move it the other direction.
Yeah.
And leave it, like, basically it was in the same spot. I just moved it in the other direction. And all of a sudden, instead of taking up, you know, 3 feet worth of space or 2 feet worth of space, now it's taking up like a few centimeters.
Yeah, so someone didn't care to take his like 5 seconds of his time just to put it nicely, so it's not going to interfere with pedestrians.
And also none of the pedestrians who passed by moved it. They just let, you know, everyone just walked around. But
I think it's still, because it's a new thing, people still don't know. There's no culture of like putting it nicely, or like, I don't know, it's just first time, so people just knew what the hell is happening. Pedestrians not happy because quite often scooter riders ride so fast, so we're just scared, and so many people also unhappy about the same what you just described. What, you know, we just leave it like just whatever. I just left, okay, bye.
Yeah, and I guess that's the nice thing about the cycle bikes is you have bike lanes.
You have a station,
which is
really
cool, and you have stations. And you actually have enough stations. I think that's the problem with a lot of other cities is the station is so far from where you want to go, or when you're going to pick it up, then it's not worth it.
Yeah.
But here, I feel like I've never had to walk more than one block.
Yeah, it's good. We put some stations even in these residential areas. So it's kind of, if it's not far from you, you can just take a bicycle in the morning to your university, maybe to work. And just like, it's so cheap, convenient.
Yeah, I can see the bikes. The station, I can see it from my bedroom window. And I normally... I like riding it. I think the only reason why I took a taxi this morning was Kristen lives on the other side of the old city from me. It's not that far, but it's, you know, maybe a 25-minute walk. So the and it was raining and I was late. I was like, you know what? For €2.20, I'll just take an Uber.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of my favorite things about Vilnius is the ease of transportation and the low cost of it. Because having the option to be able to walk everywhere, especially if you're living in the center... Having the scooters if you're, you know, drunk at night and you're too lazy to walk.
Yeah.
Having the bicycles if you want to, you know, it's fun. Like, it's so fun. Like, I don't know if people realize how fun it is to ride these bikes and just be able to pick them up anywhere, drop them off. And the way it works is it's free for 30 minutes at a time. So as long as you pay the €4 a month membership, you can ride them every day, anywhere from station to station for free. And you have that, and then you have the cheap taxis, you have Uber, and you have Bolt.
Yeah.
There's just so many ways to get around, and it's so convenient. Even getting to the airport is a, you know, a 20-minute ride for less than €5.
And if you're on a budget, you can take a bus from airport, which costs you €1.
Yeah, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been taking actually a bus from the center to, I don't know, it's some residential area. Actually, where CityB headquarters are. It's like one of their tech parks.
Yeah, okay.
It's pretty far. It's like 25 minutes out of the center. But there's a really nice gym called My Fitness Calapas or something like that.
Yeah, I saw your video on Insta.
Yeah, it's a really nice gym. And I've been using this app called Trainaway, which lets you book day passes for gyms. And it was the closest gym that they had that was a partner gym. And it's allowed me to basically have kind of a normal routine, a normal life of, you know, of going to a gym and having a real workout while traveling. And the bus ride was only €1. And it was a direct bus 1G from the center.
Yeah.
So it was nice in a few ways. You know, not only did I get to work out, but I also got to see a little bit more of the city. But especially I got to have more of a local experience because I'm leaving the center where the tourists are and going somewhere that really only locals are working out of.
Yeah. And speaking about gyms, fitness, did you know what one of the strongest men in the world is Lithuanian?
Oh, nice.
Žydrūnas Savickas. He's actually from my small hometown.
What is your hometown?
Biržai.
So if you want to pick fights with random Lithuanians, don't go to Bruges. Yeah, I think I've seen those videos where like they're pulling a train.
Yeah, strongman, and he's got so many titles directly from Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he's quite famous. Yeah, we're pulling these trains, buses, and it's just crazy.
But I don't, you know what's funny is I don't think most Lithuanian guys are the stereotype of what Americans at least think of Eastern Europe or Lithuania. Like in our minds, we still think of you guys as like, you know, the former USSR, big Soviet kind of meatheads. But it's not like that anymore.
It's not like that. It's our younger generation, because you have much more of this like stylish, skinny, hipster style.
Yeah, like
going
skinny
on.
Jeans.
Yeah, but in my days, I mean, if you take like, you know, typical 30, 35, 40 years old guy, he's still typical, you know. I mean, I grew up in times where in school, if I would, as a guy, would, you know, use facial cream in the morning, I would be called gay.
Yeah. Yeah, you would still be called that now. Not really. Actually, I use it with SPF.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but it was totally different time. So it's like much more macho culture. It's just like, you know.
Yeah, but speaking of the culture, there's a huge difference here. It's almost like, almost a line. If somebody is under 25, they speak English very well. They either don't speak Russian or don't want to speak Russian, like for, at least as the first, the first introduction.
Yeah.
Like if you, so for example, if you go into a shop and you see the person is 25 or under, you I guess the preferred language would be Lithuanian, but they don't expect a foreigner to speak it because it's such a difficult language. It's not like France or something where they expect you to speak French even though you're, you know, just in France for the first time. Or even like Spain. Actually, I guess, I think a lot of countries, they kind of expect you to speak the local language.
I think Spain, France, and Italy, they prefer local. But here, if we see someone foreign, I mean, if you would ask me something in English, of course, I think, okay, it's fine.
Yeah, and it's not like offensive at all.
No,
like,
no, it's fine.
So I was a bit worried because I know there's a lot of places where you need to at least try to like start the conversation in their local language.
No,
and
if you know one or two words, it's just, of course, it's appreciated, but you don't need to do that.
Yeah, but like, yeah, but be, if you just say like, hello, you know, may I order some coffee?
Yeah.
They're not upset. They're like, this is normal. Yeah. And then if you can say achu, they're very happy.
Yeah.
And then they're like, okay, that's enough. You don't have to try anymore.
Yeah.
But if somebody is over, let's say 30, all right, most likely they didn't grow up speaking English, and most likely they speak Russian as their kind of second language, or maybe even native language, like first mother tongue if they're a bit older.
I mean, in this area in Vilnius, I don't know what is percentage, but we probably have like 30% of people who are from Russia, from Poland, because, you know, Vilnius was part of Poland at some point. And yeah, so basically that's do you know why
why USSR, you know?
Yeah, do you know why, I mean, do you know why this, you know, with this distinguish is. I mean, what younger people don't speak Russian, that's because my generation, we still grew up in basically in Soviet Union. Yeah. And on our TVs, you always have TV shows, cartoons, all is in Russian. Mm-hmm. And even movies, we had this VHS.
Yeah.
It was like quite expensive at that time. And only language which you had in these is Russian. So basically, if someone is 30, 35, they definitely grew up with some kind of Russian in their life. But my sister, she's like 25. She didn't know any Russian. So she's like, kind of maybe knows a little bit, but can't speak at all.
And I think that actually makes it really easy where here in Vilnius, it's like probably all Lithuania. It's like, if you see someone's young, just speak to them in English. Yeah. If you see someone's old or older than 30, 35, then you can try English, but most likely they won't speak it. And then if you don't speak Lithuanian, which I'm sure most of you don't speak, then you can try to speak to them in Russian. But I'm also assuming most people don't speak Russian. So basically, stay in the city center and just speak English to younger people. And luckily, most shops, most restaurants, the people working there are younger anyways. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I really love how Lithuania and Vilnius is actually changing you. If you take customer service, 15 years ago, oh my God, it's so awful. I mean, it would be typical to go, you know, order something. And if waiter is like not happy about something, they would be like, oh, okay. It's just like, you know, yeah, it was typical. It's normal. Or if you ask to change some, you know, you have some dish and you, oh, can you take it out, you know, without this? Yeah. And now it's totally different. And I think because so many people, young people work in customer service. So of course they well-traveled usually, they speak English and they just, yeah.
The really weird part was I was really excited to get a Lithuanian driver this morning because I wanted to ask her a bunch of questions about Lithuania. But I was trying to like make small talk,
yeah.
And she was just like not speaking to me at all. Like she said hello.
What did you say?
I was just like, you know, how are you doing? Are you from Vilnius? Uh-huh. And she would answer. She's like, yeah, I'm from Vilnius.
Well, we usually don't do small talk.
Okay. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
But it was really strange because then when we arrived at the destination, she was like, oh, by the way, this is a really good coffee shop, and like telling me some tips. And I was like,
In English.
Oh, nice. So I was like, oh, maybe at first I was like, maybe she didn't speak English, but I was like, she also looks like she's about 20, 25. So maybe she does.
Oh, she's a young one.
And it was, I don't know. Maybe I have no idea what happened. Maybe she just doesn't want to talk while driving. But like once we arrived, I was in the car for a few minutes, just like talking to her.
I don't know. You never know what's happened. Maybe she was like tired or confused or like, I have no idea.
Yeah. But I think the local culture here is really interesting because it's a blend. It's all, like it's almost half USSR, half Western Europe, almost exactly like this like I don't know. It's like this weird blend that, for example, the hallways of this building look like USSR.
Yeah, it looks like ruined, like after war or something.
But that's how every building, or most buildings in Ukraine, still look like today. Like walking through these arches where everything's kind of old looking, going through these hallways where everything's like the paint's gone. It's just like a really old looking, like kind of shady places. And then you get inside the apartment and it's really nice and modern. Ukraine is exactly the same, except for it's even worse because like here the lights were working in Ukraine usually.
Have lights.
Yeah, and it's not that they don't have lights, it's that nobody wants to take the responsibility to maintain it. Like the landlord doesn't want to spend the money on the lights.
Oh yeah,
because
they think, why me? Why should I spend and just fix it?
And the people that are living in the apartments are like, it's not my job, it's like someone else's job. So nobody does it. So then often you walk through like a dark hallway, or maybe there's one light at the very top that like the one person is like, oh, I need it because I would die.
What do you think about Lithuanians? Do they smile?
No.
In the streets, yeah. It's typically like neutral face.
Yeah, but here it's the same, right?
Yeah. And I don't remember. Is it like on my fifth or sixth grade? I had actually English teacher from US, from New York. And one of the things he noticed was, Lithuanians don't smile much. Yeah. But he was so happy because, wow, but in US, if you talk and someone, you know, even if they smile, you don't know if they smile because they like you or just they just trying to be nice. But Lithuanians, if they don't like you, they're just gonna show you.
Yeah.
And if they like it, and if they say, okay, I really like you, appreciate you, it was a good time, they usually mean it.
Yeah. I like that as well, to be honest. It took a lot of getting used to.
Mm.
Because in the US, it's like you have to be polite, you have to be nice to everyone.
Yeah.
But, and a lot of Europeans or Eastern Europeans will complain saying it's so, Americans are so fake. And it's kind of true because let's say you meet someone for the very first like moment, they'll be so nice to you, like overly nice to you. And then they'll ask like, oh, what do you do? You know, what's your work? And then if they find out that there's no connection or there's no benefit to them of knowing you,
really,
very quickly they're cold and they're just like, okay, bye. Or
is
like
the same in all the states?
It's way more in like Los Angeles, for example, compared to, you know, even San Francisco, where people are a little bit more generally
that
nicer.
That sounds a bit awful. You not bad to me, so I just zone out.
Yeah, and it's very flaky as well. So it's very common in the U.S. to say, oh, so nice to meet you. Let's get together sometime. Maybe we can meet for coffee. And then they either just like leave without exchanging contact information.
Damn.
Or they give you, you know, some information, but then they never answer. Or maybe if it's a fake phone number, I'm like, why would you
that's ridiculous,
go through all this effort and then not want to actually connect? Like, just don't go through the effort in the first place. While here, I feel like if somebody says to you, let's meet for coffee tomorrow, here's my phone number, they mean let's meet for coffee tomorrow, here's my phone number.
Yeah, I never been to US, but yeah, I heard about that a lot, and yeah, I like it. And at one point in my life, I lived in London, UK for 2 years, and you know, we also have this like, how are you, how are you doing, you know, and I actually thought they actually care and asking me how am I doing.
No, they don't care.
At one point, I remember I was sick and I started telling him, oh, I have some temperature, it's just so bad, and I saw him, he's feeling,
polite, like,
because I thought he's actually asking me how am I doing, so I'm just telling him. But it doesn't work like that.
So that part of the culture is very, you know, kind of the, and I don't want to say like Soviet or Russian, because I know that Lithuanians nowadays want to separate from it, but it's more, what would be more polite? Like saying like more like Slavic culture or more like...
Yeah, I think it's more Slavic culture. And I mean, Lithuanians, we don't hate Russian people, but Russia, like a government, all these things, we just, we have really bad past.
Yeah.
We were occupied twice. And actually, I don't know if you know that, but during first time when we were occupied by Russia, we actually tried to kind of delete our culture. And you now learning Kirillitsa, yeah? Like Russian letters. It's called Kirillitsa.
Cyrillic,
yeah. So basically what they tried to do, they banned Lithuanian letters. And instead of Lithuanian, we put Cyrillic. So all the books would be in Cyrillic, but in just Lithuanian,
Cyrillic pronunciation.
Okay. Yeah, and we had like Lithuanians printing books in Poland and bringing them over and homeschooling kids in proper Lithuanian. So we can just continue being really vain.
But even now, I didn't realize, I think I did a walking tour here. Highly recommend it. Actually, if you guys want to know more about Lithuania in general, I'm writing a blog post kind of with all the things I did, everywhere I ate, all the kind of things I did on johnnyft.com. So read that. But my walking tour guide, she was really worried about Russia like invading and, you know, having it, to her, is a real threat. And I was looking on the map geographically, and I was like, no, it doesn't make sense because it's so far, they would have to first go through, Latvia first and some other countries.
But did you see Kaliningrad State?
And then she mentioned...
It's a border with Russia.
Well, and I was like, yeah, the sea is so far. Because for me, I was thinking, like, logically, why would they want a country? And she was, you know, she had mentioned that everything was fine, and a lot of it was just like nobody really believed that Russia was a big deal until Russia basically took Crimea. And then they're like, okay, if they're going to take that, what else can they take? But when I looked at the map, I was like, no, it's not possible because, like, your sea port, like, the only reason why they would want you is for the port, and then so far. And then they're like, no, they already took it. What is Kaliningrad? Like, is it...
It's just part of Russia. Yeah, it just...
But was it... Did it used to be part of Lithuania?
I don't think it was part of Lithuania.
Because geographically, it looks like it's part of Lithuania. If you just look on a map.
It's not, no. It's just like piece of land, which is like, yeah, it's kind of weird because you have like two Russias separated, like yeah. Small Russia called Kaliningrad and the mainland Russia.
So if you guys look at a map, there's is it the Black Sea or what sea is it?
Baltic Sea.
Baltic Sea. Yeah. The Baltic Sea, this small patch of land called Kaliningrad, Lithuania, and then basically Russia, yeah. Or I guess, you know, Belarus, then Russia.
And that's where they deploy all the ballistic missiles to threaten Europe. Like, oh, it's just like, yeah.
Yeah. So that actually makes it really weird because you're basically sandwiched between two Russian territories.
Yeah.
It's like playing the game of Risk, where the board game, where if they decide to put all their armies on Kaliningrad and just use it as a base, they could.
They actually recently, maybe half a year or a year ago, we had actual war games on Belarus soil, and there's like so many, like, you know, military tanks and soldiers and everything. European Union and we specifically were even worrying, like, what we're gonna do? Is it gonna be like invasion maybe? Because they actually pretended that, yeah, we're just practicing, but if you see the actual, you know, practice maps and diagrams, we're practicing like how to take over, you know, this part of Europe. So it's like, what the hell are you doing, Russia? And we're like, no, it's just practice.
Yeah, we're just practicing how we would
not real.
Potentially invade you, but we're going to use real tanks. Same,
like, did you see Russia? We had like announcement about new ballistic missiles, and they made this like animation where ballistic missiles go to California. And
it's just like, we're just playing. Just in case. Like, in case what?
This psychological warfare, you know, it's like, yeah, it's real.
Yeah, I guess it'd be the same as like if I was like matching with girls on Tinder and like messaging them like while I had a girlfriend, I'd be like, I'm just practicing. It's not real.
I'm checking the reaction.
I haven't done it. Yeah. But like, they're like, yeah, but why are you going through the process of doing it?
Yeah, it's so weird.
Just to see if it's possible.
And that's what happened in Ukraine because, you know, in the beginning, these soldiers in green uniforms start appearing and European Union and Ukraine was like, what the hell, Russia? Are these your soldiers? Russia, no. It's no. We don't know what's happening. But when they took over, it's like, Russia, you lied. It's like, yeah. Sorry.
Okay, yeah.
So it's just like so sneaky.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird. But yeah. I would say Lithuania, I think even though culturally, you still have a big generation of kind of the Slavic culture and the Russian influence.
Yeah. We like to pretend what it's like we more... you know, European men, Slavic, but we have so much influence from Russia and Slavic culture. So it's just like even food and just, yeah.
Yeah, but I think with the new generation, because the new generation is basically super Western Europe. I think as time goes by, it's going to be more and more Western, but it also means that probably prices are going to keep going higher. And they're going to lose some of the... I think it's kind of charming, the Slavic culture. You know, there's a lot of things about it I really like.
Yeah, I mean, people in general, Slavic people, Russian people, they're really nice, hospitable, and really, really nice people. As after you get to know them. If you see, like, people on the streets in Moscow, it's going to be grim, and it's like, oh, I feel unwelcome here. But if you get to know them, make friends, they're super nice and friendly.
Yeah, I agree. So... overall, I think Vilnius is a very nice city. I think Lithuania is a very nice country. And I think this is a good time to visit. I think it probably would have been even better to visit 4 years ago when it was even cheaper.
Yeah, that's true.
But right now, it's not bad still. It's
not bad. I mean, while I've been traveling, I see more positive things in my country. It's like clean water, good air. It's like, you know, transportation is good, and we don't have any, like, you know, tsunamis going on, earthquakes, like no big, like, nature stuff happening. It's like so peaceful and nice. And actually tap water is one of the best in Europe because we have so much, you know,
deep underground
pure water. Yeah,
well, it's funny because I agree most of the time, but half the time I've been drinking out of the tap, it tasted really, like, really bad.
Really?
Like, either chlorine or it was, like, white and cloudy.
Oh, okay.
And I wonder if it's just because I'm staying in this really old flat that maybe, like, the water wasn't very good.
Oh, it might be some maybe water shortages because now it's just so hot. And actually in Vilnius, government said like, okay, maybe you should save some water because, you know, it's just like running out a little bit. So it might be, it's not as pure as typically.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
But the other time, like the other half of the time, I drank the tap water and I was like, oh, this is really good. So I don't know.
Okay.
But it is nice that it's like, that you can actually drink the tap water.
Yeah.
And it's nice that you can have a comfortable life for 1,000 euros a month, which isn't possible in like anywhere in Western Europe. It's nice that it has a mixture of the two cultures still. So I would recommend people to check out Vilnius now and not wait 5 years, because I have a feeling that in 5 years it's going to be much more similar to, in terms of pricing, but maybe even culture, to the rest of Western Europe, and there'll be less of a big reason to come here. Maybe yeah. Become more crowded as well. But right now, I think it's a really, really good time to check out Vilnius. I would say right now, you could just come for a few days and see it, but I actually think it's a nice place to kind of just base yourself and live. I think if you want to get to know locals, if you want to go on dates, you can't just come for a few days or a week.
Yeah.
Like it's not going to happen. Like you have to, like, I think Lithuanians are a bit hesitant to get to know people unless they're living here. But I think that if you're living here like long term, I think people will open up, and it's it'd be a good place to be.
I mean, in Vilnius, you definitely can live on 1,000 euros a month. 800 is doable quite easily. But if you like want to stay super cheap, you just don't care much about maybe meeting women or guys. And in my hometown, the rent for one apartment, of course, long term, would be only 100 euros per month.
Wow.
Yeah. Utility bills might be, with heating, average is like maybe 70 euros. And for food, you can cook at home, 150 euros maybe, and just go to the gym, it's like 20, 25 euros. And you can live on so, so cheap. I mean, if you, that's what you're looking for, just be on a cheap, have really good internet, and just stay there.
Yes, if you want to train to be the next strong man, digital nomad, be a good option. All right. Well, if you guys want to know more, either leave a comment on this episode as Travel Like a Boss podcast, episode 225, or go to johnnyfd.com and read my guide about Vilnius. That's where I'll talk more about the culture, the food, where to stay, what I did, all these kind of cool things. If you want to check out, I guess just come. I think there's no reason not to come.
Yeah, and flights in Europe is so cheap. So even if you go to, like, I don't know, some other country, you can easily just come over for a few days, fly to another country. It's like people in Asia and most of the world can't understand how from Vilnius you sometimes can fly for 15 euros.
I flew from...
to London.
I flew from Kiev here, round trip, 28 euros. With Air Club.
For me to take a bus from my hometown, 200 kilometers from Birzhe to Vilnius, is like 12 euros.
Yeah.
But sometimes you can get a flight ticket to London for 15 euros.
Price. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
By the way, Idas took a bus from his hometown to Vilnius just to meet up me and Sam. So thank you so much for that.
It was really exciting to know that you are here. So I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to miss my chance. I'm going to message you and see what happens. And yeah. So nice.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And you treated us to dinner, so thank you so much for that.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, if people want to keep in touch with you, are you on social media or anything?
I'm not big on social media, but I have Facebook and Instagram. Maybe if you want to check some pictures, so Instagram / AIDASRASIMS. No? Did I miss it?
Okay. I'll put that in the show notes as well.
Oh, okay, okay.
You guys can replay that if you need. So, Achu.
Prashom.
How do you say, thanks for listening to the Travel Like a Boss podcast in Lithuanian?
I'm thinking of an easier way. Achu kad klausotės podcasto.
Thank you for listening to the Travel Like a Boss podcast. If you want to hear more, including the bonus, how to choose the perfect niche episode, join our mailing list at travellikeabosspodcast.com. See you next week, and remember, if you want to travel like a boss, you need to be your own boss. So start your online business today and start living the lifestyle you've always dreamed of.